Hi, this is David Milch. I created the series Deadwood, and we're going to watch this episode together.
You want to know when we're going to open, Ted?
This whole storyline about Swearingen falling ill, a lot of people had considerable trepidation about.
Outside Al's door will not hasten the situation.
It's interesting sometimes the way the what goes on behind the scenes is sort of mirrored or reflected in some way by what goes on in front of the camera.
He locks the door, Dan, when he leaves his office. Al does not lock the door when he's inside.
That's just the exception that proves the fucking rule.
In the episode itself, the emotional ecology, certainly the gem and to some extent of the whole camp, is disrupted by Swearingen's disempowerment by his being ill. And there was a lot of resistance.
Frequents my buffet religiously.
By the actors got a little nervous, and some people at HBO got nervous that we were incapacitating Swearingen. There's old Garrett Delahunt, Billy Sanderson. Garrett played McCall in the first season of Deadwood, and a good deal was made of the fact that we were using the same actor. I don't quite understand that. I mean,
while I was waiting for
people
you to
go to movies, you know, with they'll say, "Well, geez, Tom Cruise was in Risky Business. I can't go see him in War of the Worlds." But I've never understood a lot of that stuff.
Certain things I said yesterday, I regret. I'll be grateful if you'd not rely on them.
There's old Tim copping to being a liar.
Representations I made as to letters I'd written, I didn't.
I'll be grateful then if you don't rely on my assurance that I got them.
All right.
I think we called the first two episodes A Lie Agreed Upon, parts one and two, and this is one of the lies that was agreed upon.
This oatmeal looks old.
It does, doesn't it? Richardson, goddamn you. The oatmeal's clotted.
Those are two funny guys.
Stop spouting gibberish. Billy and
Farnham and Richardson. Richardson was an extra. He never had spoken on camera, but he just has such a funny mug. I just had to.
Like this. One draws one's menials from a small and brackish pool.
It's a funny line. One draws one's menials from a small and brackish pool.
Once the pig is digested, perhaps we could pursue a possibility that's come to mind.
If the spirit still moves in you, sure.
Maybe we could do it now.
No. Let's let your mind ripen and mature the possibility first.
The creature I saw outside our
That's,
place
That's Stubbs' new mentor.
Said the camp's mayor.
Maddie, Madam Batman. They had worked together
Farnham.
A while before.
He owns the hotel.
Have you affection for Mayor Farnham?
None.
Good.
Because the man the mayor expects to digest is going to toy and play with Mr. Farnham from Camouflage for as long as he finds it amusing. And then make him a meal of his own.
Who is the man?
A trick.
A specialist.
A specialist.
Who
That's
asks to be called
a particular kind of warp.
Mr. W.
Sexual obsessive.
E.B. Farnham, demanding entry.
It's another kid who was an extra, Davey. He wound up playing a big scene later in the last episode
Summon
of the
Al.
Second season.
Not summonable.
Everybody was
well,
really happy
there,
he did well.
Summonable.
Won't you go on up and summon him yourself, E.B.?
Happily.
He's behind lock and key.
You're certain he's within?
Called out to my knock, said, get the fuck away.
Here's the thing, the way the sort of underlings get thrown off stride when the boss gets sick. They're all kind of figuring out. It's like a mobile, you know, when you push one part of the mobile, the whole goddamn mobile starts losing equilibrium.
Al, if you're not dead and already moldering, I send news to revive you. A fish to rival the fabled Leviathan has swum into our waters.
Look at that mug.
Get well soon, and we'll land the cocksucker together. Your friend, E.B.
You know, when you're a writer, you see faces like that, you feel like you're stealing your money.
Because
you just,
you,
you know, I
secure of the newly
you don't have
company.
To do anything.
Please.
You just moved here?
Just yesterday.
This might be interesting to you. You
house.
See that kid with his back to you?
My pa's brother that married my mom.
He was the son of a guy.
So now it's my pa.
That I had known for a long time, and the guy called me and said his son was dying.
Damon,
coming.
And
my pa and me are going to grow
he
had, up.
He wanted to be an actor and so forth.
Come back?
And so I said, we'll bring him out here and I'll write a part for him. So they flew him out and I made
Keep
up this story.
I call him Jumbo.
Poor kid. He died, I think, 3 days before it went on the air. But he saw it. I mean, we sent it to him.
Morning, William.
Morning, Mr. Bull. Got your gun and badge back.
I did. I put him in that basket for you to see.
Did you fight
this
that
kid
man
was
again?
A nice kid.
No, we didn't have to fight.
That
you know, child actors, that's not an easy... I don't think I would want to be... well, of course, I'm not
There's
sure I'd want to be an adult actor Boy, either, but just because there. You need somebody else's permission, you know, to practice your craft. But this was a pretty nice kid.
Maybe after work, we can make him pay for his slothful ways.
Look at how great this location looks. Maria Caso won the Emmy last week. I'm recording this just before the second set of Emmys, but the Kraft Emmys have been given out. And Maria won. And she's just extraordinary. They built that stamp mill that's up in, it's about 50 miles away. It's up in near Mount Pinos or something. But anyway, the people whose land this is on, the mother homeschools the kids. And I exchange letters with those kids. There's this little Bree. She's
Good morning,
a cutie.
Mr. Bullock.
Good morning. Good morning.
She was an extra, too.
Mrs. Garrett has gone to see her claim.
Has she? That actress, Sarah Mr. Paulson.
I see.
She asked if
we had to, I had to write her out because she got a Tennessee Williams
Sophia
play
can learn on another watch.
All right.
In New York.
When opportunity permits, you might acquire Mrs. Garrett. As few children
as our end of camp.
I take your meaning, Mr. Bullock.
If she decided it was appropriate, other parties would be delighted and grateful.
Yes, well, she will have to decide that.
Yes.
The camp pugilist.
Fond as that I guy. Am of you, Joni. I wouldn't have brought my girls.
We shot this scene after the rest of the episode.
Tricks sweeten the prospect, Mr. W. He offered on one of my girls.
And I intercut it with this because
Mr. W is chief.
The other scene, the scene with Farnham and
biggest in the Comstock and
Wolcott, played a little long for me without being broken up.
Mr. W enjoys being cranky with his women. But sometimes when disappointed, his crankiness runs away with him.
What's going to disappoint him?
Devious sort that I am. I've got the girl he's interested in on ice.
Thank you.
Mr. Wolcott?
Yeah, now see, this scene had been going on for two minutes. I do not say owner. And I took that first paradox.
Final earthly communication.
This is the old Hickok letter. Everybody broke my balls after the first year because, well, what happened to the Hickok letter?
Quartz deposit promising. In Bill's own words.
So I wrote something about the Hickok letter.
How much wealth is that? I don't know, Mr. Wolcott. I don't know how high Bill could count.
How much do you want me to pay?
I'd hardly expect you to pay anything. Imagining rather... I will pay you your cost to see the letter delivered to its proper recipient. Plus...
Sexual compulsives. Those are strange personalities to try and write because their motivation, you know, is so inexplicable. It's not grounded in anything. It's like, a calling card from the devil.
So
you know, I, too, have a hand here.
Against profits I might gain in the event that this letter, proving undeliverable, contains such valuable information. Have you an amount in mind?
$10,000.
Less the $100 you would pay me.
Wolcott's fucking with him.
$9,900 net, then. Me to you.
Yes.
And I would pay you that now, before attempting the letter's delivery.
Oh, yes. Once you have the letter, all my connection to it is severed.
Look at Billy's hair.
I
grease
see,
in his
to
hair.
Deliver it or not, or whatever the hell you want to do.
You'll have my decision shortly.
See, fine. When you're writing a comedic character, the combination irreconcilables, you know, a fastidiousness with the handkerchief with the fact he's got like 8 days worth of grease in his hair.
See now what it takes to bring you back into my life.
Just passing through, Mr. Starr.
I was in New York, speaking to the some Hebrew association about Sol Star. I cannot believe that I flew there. I'm a Jewish person myself. I think I must have some ambivalence about it because it was supposed to be about the anti-Semitism of the portrayal of Star.
Morning.
I charter a plane, $50,000, to go there and say I'm not an anti-Semite.
Trixie.
I'm an idiot.
Many thanks.
Ah.
He doesn't look very Jewish, does he? The guy we originally cast was a guy named Tim Blake Nelson. He was in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Martha and the boy.
He was Jewish. He was actually Jewish.
Or I see what you're asking. As far as her having a different
opinion. This guy's not Jewish. He was supposed to go with me to the Inquisition there in New York.
Well,
he was smart.
Anyways, could you open up?
Sure. Glad to.
He said
any help with the person?
Unfortunately, he'd been murdered the night before, so he couldn't attend.
Swearingen said county commissioners are all from Yankton.
When was this?
Just before we hit the mud.
This scene didn't play very well. What I was trying to show there is Bullock was glad, you know, the blessed like ordinariness of things. He's back working and so on, but it just looks like sort of smug self-satisfaction.
Hey, man, maybe we should try to do something about it.
I'm with you.
God damn it, Al. Such as they are, my arts cannot be practiced at this
rate. You know, in the Christmas Carol, when Scrooge wakes up there, everything looks great to Scrooge. Just the fact that he's awake. And, you know, the ghost there of Christmas Past isn't with him no more. That's what I was trying to get, but it didn't work.
Doc?
Trixie? Rest, uninterrupted, no visits, no exception.
It is.
Promise Frey with Bullock, he's poorly?
All the minions getting.
If you can get him to grant you entry, maybe you'll confide that to me.
Particularly when it's a little bit of a dysfunctional environment, you know, and the boss is unwell, everybody starts scrambling.
It's Trixie that's overheard the doc's instruction. So let me just shout my information from here. Nobody's dead. Bullock's gone to that house you built. Star's on his feet, more or less. Anyways, I'm gonna stay on the air over to the hardware store.
Yeah.
Fucking telegraph poles, Al. Our next thing to land it in the fucking thoroughfare. Next leap of the creature, they'll be here. All right, Al. Where's fucking Dolly?
Fucking?
When was she last with him?
Daybreak, just before he get Bullock back in iron.
We seen him after she did.
You brew him my fucking tea. Put it on a tray. You take it up to him and make him fucking drink it.
What?
If he done present himself in a few hours, kick down the door and get the fucking doc in there. I'm Lila. Welcome to the Bell Union.
Well, I'm Francis Wolcott, which I'd be grateful if you tell your employer.
This is Francis Wolcott, Si.
That there's Megan. She's the daughter of the director of photography.
And what do you drink?
I hate auditions. I would rather cast strangers than have to, because
straight up,
please.
Everybody's got to have wind up with hurt feelings, so I prefer to cast people who've never acted before.
I would rather we two converse privately.
That's the other reason why I wanted Garrett there to play, because that way I wouldn't have to see new actors.
I'm not that kind of fella.
Maybe you're just waiting for the right offer.
It's late in the game, but I suppose anything's possible.
Will you take the air?
If I'm to lose my virtue, I'd as soon do it outside these walls.
You've approached a group in San Francisco that does business with my employer.
That group and employer bullshit really quickens me with fucking trust.
The group you've approached is a fraternal Chinese organization.
Tong is not a clever enough word.
You've offered them a contract to send members to this camp.
See, now here's Tolliver Breaking Bad, and then the minute he hears the name of George Hurst, boing, he becomes very obsequious.
Mining combination brings those slant eyes in by the boatload?
No, sir. I work for one man.
Jesus Christ. There's never one of us?
George Hurst.
There's the boing.
I meant no disrespect of any kind to you or Mr. Hurst or by any word I've said from the moment we've met.
I understand that.
I've...
Look at Keone there in the background, the guy that plays Wolf.
Comstock, Montana.
He's another guy.
Every other place he's ever
I feel
operated,
like I'm stealing. Of course, he actually doesn't say anything you can understand.
Showed imagination, and foresight, and a tolerance for risk. It was impressive to Mr. Hurst. We want to work with you here.
You know, the language on the show, I mean, you know, the profanity was quite controversial. But what I was trying to do with that was sort of break down the conventions of language.
Get over here and meet a fucking gentleman.
And show the way language regenerates a meaning, which is dependent upon its particular environment. The reason people in Deadwood spoke the way they did was they were sending a sort of signal about this was a lawless environment, and that they would obey no laws, even in terms of the conventions of language, as a way of saying, I am equal to this environment. I am, you know, if you meet somebody in a bar after work, you know, and you haven't seen them before, you're trying to be polite, say, hey, where are you from? And the guy says, oh, I'm from Topeka, Kansas. In Deadwood, if you see someone you don't know in a bar, you say, where are you from? They're liable to kill you because these are all people who have, you know, complicated backgrounds. They don't know if you've got a warrant or whatever. So, in Deadwood, if you say, where are you from, somebody says, what the fuck is that to you? As a way of saying, every word is important in an environment like that.
Oh, Christ. Are we
so the first obligation was to sort of break down the viewer's conventional ideas of what words meant. And so I wanted a sort of unrelenting, you know, stream of obscenity at the beginning of the show. You know, that speech, the first speech of Ellsworth, you know.
Fuck off.
No.
The elements of that in that scene were, first you saw the gold, you know, Swearengen's weighing the gold, then he pours a drink, so it's establishing the nature of this environment, and then once that alcohol is in him, then the language changes. He says, I might have fucked my life up, flattered and hammered shit, but I stand before you today beholden to no human cocksucker.
He wouldn't have seen it.
And then he begins to eliminate the elements of the ordering forces in society, and not the U.S. government or the savage fucking red man or George Custer himself had better try and take it away from me. And Swearengen, by way of affirming the environment, says they better not try it in here.
Thank you, Charlie.
Then they address the subject of even of accents. He said, with that limey damn accent of yours, Swearengen, are those rumors true you're descended from English royalty? Swearengen says, I'm descended from all them cocksuckers.
Wide knees.
Which is a way of saying that of the invoke content of language.
We're partners, ain't we?
The logic of language is gone. You know, people are going to lie all the time. And finally, when you've sort of obliterated any expectation that the prior meanings you affix to language will obtain, then you start to regenerate meaning. And that's why a guy like Wu, for me, is an interesting character, because what I try to do with Wu is, there's a guy who knows like one word of English, cocksucker, and yet the viewer, as a result of protracted exposure, is able to understand everything. You know, he knows San Francisco too. And then this year we're giving him two other words, 10 days.
But if I do, using my head won't be the tip-off.
Which is to say, always, language generates meaning from context. And what begins as what seems like an unremittingly and unrelieved profane environment, in fact, it's just finding a new way to organize itself. So at the level of language, I was trying to prefigure the theme of, you know, of the improvisation of society. There's more than you ever wanted to know about dirty words.
Goddamn, outthinking myself, resupplying in smaller orders.
You've been dealing with a few uncertainties.
If the claims get allowed or they don't, are Yankton stacks the commissioners or not?
We're either in business or we ain't, and if we are, you reduce costs, buying in volume.
Your old man.
On his deathbed in fucking Vienna.
Fellas, on the mend.
Doing better, thank you.
Hope you are too.
We was gonna thin these inquiries yesterday before
There's
that
another butt-ugly face.
We've been gonna thin them for several weeks.
Dayton.
Farnham slop out.
Dayton
okay.
was a friend of Eddie Dayton's O'Neill of and him. Michael Madsen, who were guys who were in the last series I did, Big Apple.
We've been somewhat remiss.
And
fella said never put off till tomorrow. We'll wait till the day.
He would hang around on the set. He always cracked me up. So I wrote, you know, we made him Charlie Utter. There's another part I didn't have to audition.
By the Hickok letter.
Wonderful.
I'll have a bill of sale.
Well, certainly, sir. Of course. For reasons of legal nicety.
I remember when they were doing this scene.
Purchasing the right to deliver.
I got the idea of what must be behind that door of Farnham's. I said, he must live in the original platonic idea of a shitbox. So we started to figure out what it was like. And then later on, I think in the season, we did some scenes in there.
You need to let the doc in.
There's Jerry Jewell there. I met her in a pharmacy. So I told her I'd make up a part for her.
And you ain't fucking yes and thin my foot's dragging. Fuck this right, doc.
Fuck it.
Dad!
This is funny.
Break the fucking door down, Dad!
Help! Follows you, Doc! Get out of the fucking way!
Oh, Jesus fucking Christ!
You all right?
I think I broke my fucking shoulder.
Just open up my case. Al?
See, my concern about Swearingen as a character was that he's so imposing and sort of comprehensive a presence that it's easy for the audience to sort of invest in him, to make it like the Al Swearingen show. It's the same thing with Sipowicz in NYPD Blue.
So I'm sure he's out there.
No idea.
I never heard of it either.
Almost all the stories we do, you know, are responses to what I see in front of me. I mean, that's why I try not to plan the stories in advance, which is what endears me so much to the production staff. But the thing is that watching Swearingen in the first two episodes, I started to think, you know, this show's going to turn into how Al figures out what's going on and fucks other people up, and the audience is, you know, it can become a one-trick pony really easily. So, you know, it's like the same thing that happened in the first season. I wanted to get the audience to invest in Hickok. This kind of old idea of what the hero was, and then deprive him of the hero. Because part of the process of mourning, you know, is like anger, whatever that broad was with the five steps of mourning. What a lunatic she turned out to be there at the end. She thought she was in communication with Mars. I forget her name. But anyways, so one of the things that an audience does, like if you deprive them of their hero, they're not playing no more. That's anger. That's it. I'm not going to watch a show like that. That's bullshit. Because they don't feel, it's, you know, when you watch a television series, it's sort of different from going out, you know. If you bond with something that's come into your house, it's a very tentative thing, and once you finally do it, you don't want any disruptions in it. You don't want anything changed. So, of course, nobody likes to admit that, so what they say is that's bullshit story. You know, they shouldn't kill Hickok that soon.
He's my
but
friend,
in fact, when you discover in yourself the emotional resources to adapt to the new environment, the bond with that world becomes even stronger. And so what I wanted to do with Swearingen getting sick was to have the audience start saying, you know, this show is fucked. This show is going off course. This is stupid. I hate that. And then gradually, you know, these other characters actually are not that uninteresting either. And I also wanted to put surrogates for the audience into the world of the show to show different people thrown back on themselves when Al is ill and the way that they sort of act out, you know, the guy, the redheaded actor in NYPD Blue, when he left, everybody, oh, that's it. There's no way that shows. And so I had Sipowicz sort of outflank everybody. When the new guy came in, all the new guy does is he shakes hands with Sipowicz. He says, how you doing, Andy? Excuse me. He goes into the boss. He says, that's not going to work. That relationship is not going to work. The boss says, what happened? He said, don't get me started. There's so many things wrong with this guy. Well, what did he do? Hey, Andy, how are you? That kind of bullshit. That's no good.
Did they speak that way then?
I think I told that same story last year. That's one of the adjustments of aging. You reconcile yourself. You know, well, I only know so many stories. So.
I should tell you, Mr. Wolcott, I have seen men in this very camp feeling themselves victimized, seek redress in fashions I thought imprudent.
Violently, you mean?
Thus, at the lesson. Dearly bought, as you would have it, is where I would leave this business.
In any case, I was an intermediary in this transaction.
Ah, then. Having been a pupil, it falls to you now to instruct your principal. I wonder, Mr. Wolcott, if some second letter couldn't be drafted to put some sharper point on the lesson. Maybe remunerative to...
See where Wolcott looked away there? I had a whole thing in there with the tit licker.
Mr. Hurst twice.
At that point.
I missed the name, sir, but I can't aver as a general...
And showing Wolcott realizing just how nuts this environment was.
Whomever you represent.
George
But the poor kid...
The Ophir find in the Comstock.
You'll be shocked to hear he wasn't a real actor.
Oh, you know him personally?
And he didn't do the thing very well there.
Of course, I know of George Hurst and his reputation and accomplishments.
The titlicker came about because I was doing in the first season, I was doing a storyline where these two thieves came into the camp, these two young thieves, and they were pretending to be brother and sister. And Swearingen is trying to ingratiate himself with the boy because he wants to turn the girl out as a whore. And so it's like, you know, in Pinocchio, when they're saying, oh, Pinocchio, here is the island of whatever it is. It's so much fun and everything. So Swearingen is saying to this young kid, I was trying to figure out, well, what would make it seem like Disneyland? You know, so Swearingen says, oh, this guy, he runs past these whores every morning and he licks their tits and he's just trying to make the kid laugh. So then I figured, well, it might not be a bad thing to play.
Remove your hand from my forearm. Do not touch me again.
A lot of sexual obsessives don't like to be touched.
But that is a...
And, you know, that thing, don't look at me, you know, while I'm whipping my Skippy and all that stuff. They don't want to be known. I feel the self must... They must feel it so vile, you know, and filthy.
That would set off exactly against the funds he might otherwise believe you fleeced him of.
Anything, sir.
This service would enlist you and one or two others, circulating certain rumors about the future of the camp. In particular, about the validity of the present titles to the claims.
I try to believe, you know, if God is anywhere, he's everywhere, so that even like a guy like this lives in God's world, not to say God approves of him, but that, you know, that. So I try to make him a credible character.
A whorehouse succeeding to that title, has just opened.
Nothing just happened, Mr. Farnham. Do you think this hat makes my head look big?
No, sir. I remember I added that just because...
It makes your head look the perfect size.
His hat was too small. This is a funny scene. Tolliver is trying to destabilize his environment there because he wants everybody to start spreading rumors that the claims are going to be invalidated. So he pretends to go nuts.
You fellow man, how you handle adversity, or rumors of adversity, or ill fortune, or turns of luck. And I'm not going to further rumor or be a party to that bullshit. Do you want to know where I stand? You just look the fuck where I'm standing. You'll find out all you need to know.
So what he's saying is I'm not going to circulate rumors. And, of course, what he's trying to do is circulate the rumor.
Two fucking servants is waiting for you right fucking now. You step the fuck up.
When a series is about to end, when the rumor starts to circulate that a series is going to end, boom, everybody starts looking for a new job.
That shows me something.
So that's what Tolliver's doing.
Saying,
oh, the claims are going to be overturned. I'm not going to circulate a rumor like that, because he knows, whoop, everybody's going to start to do it. Look at that idiot. I love that guy. That's Peter Jason. He plays Con Stapleton.
Open up!
You heard him, let's go!
I thought they were so funny, I wrote this another scene later in the show where they come in and they're trying to get him to explain what's really going on.
His penis into his bladder. If he has stones, they'll click against the metal of the instrument. Assuming I can hear the clicks above his screams, I will have identified the cause of his obstruction.
Those were real instruments. It was called a sound. The way that they would try to locate the stones was they could introduce the instrument into the urethra and you could hear the sound of the instrument up against the stones. Bladder stones were a lot more frequent back then because the water was so bad. A lot of salicylates. Oh, this is the scene. Look at those two idiots.
Mr. Tolliver?
What is it?
See how scared they are?
Man, shut the door.
So Tolliver's going to use what he knows to get them to circulate rumors.
The fuck is it?
Anything you want to tell us, Mr. T?
I told you all I want to tell you outside.
Well, believe me, you don't have waverers standing in front of you, or doubters, or anyone looking for fucking severance.
Just the opposite.
What's that mean? You looking for a raise?
Well, what's going on, I suppose, is Leon's question, Mr. Tolliver.
Truth is, my questions is answered 90%.
He's a jerk. And as for the rest, you don't want no trouble.
Let me get good and fucking loaded and let the devil take the hindmost.
If you fucking walk out of here, us two are going to have words. And more than words at my first opportunity, because this was 90% his idea to come in here.
Somebody better turn over a whole card.
Both of us took a real positive impression, sir, off the talk you give us just recently here in your office.
Yeah, relative to this talk you just concluded. I guess you'd say wonderment with us is...
Don't he look like the Mad Hatter and what is that in Alice in Wonderland?
Which?
I dispute that one fucking thing changed between those two talks as to my attitude and resolve.
Did the facts of the camp situation change?
Not to my certain knowledge.
See, he's pretending that he's trying to cover up the fact.
But if you're asking in the interim if I've been privy to a rumor as far as claims being invalidated, all titles thrown out, the answer's yes.
Well, that would account for it.
But the only goddamn fact that I'm aware of is I never knew any man
ate a rumor or clothed himself with one or secured himself a piece of pussy.
Well, rumors are not facts.
So if any this cocksucker tumbles to what's going on and decides he wants to cut and run...
In the gold camps, that's... they were always trying to con each other. There's a story I always wanted to do, but I don't think we're ever going to be able to do it because it involves snow. But there's a great story about the Wolf Creek Stampede, the Wolf Mountain Stampede. This guy had a grazing area where all the people left their horses who weren't going to be using them on a daily basis. So now winter's coming, he's got like about 100 horses, and most of the people who go to the camp... they don't make any money, and the train, there's now a train coming in, so they just abandoned their horses. So now he's thinking, what am I going to do with all these horses? I don't want to have to feed these horses over the winter. So he starts a rumor, there's a tremendous strike in Wolf Mountain, like about 15 miles away. Boom, everybody goes out and buys the horses. They leave the camp. And so the guy did great, except then there was a terrible storm, an early storm, and these people were stranded out there, and a lot of people croaked. And in the story I wanted to do, Swearingen had organized the con, and he felt so bad, you know, he hadn't. He was just looking to steal the people's money. He didn't want anybody to die, and... It was going to be at the end of the season, and you saw him out in these snowdrifts dragging people out, you know, and warming them up and all of this stuff. It was, seemed to me a good illustration of the doubleness of his nature.
As far as it fucking goes, he also brought the cripple from that orphanage.
What orphanage?
Don't buy his bullshit about the 9-cent trick.
What cripple?
Jewel. That he says he's got around against some hooplehead only having 9 cents and wanting a piece of pussy? That ain't it. Why she's around is... It's his sick fucking way of protecting her.
See, Swearingen was raised in that orphanage, too. He gets all of his whores from
I'm
there.
I'm gonna get whiskey.
There's entries on both sides of the fucking ledger, is the fucking point. As I already
Trixie
talked,
halfway
I
loves him.
You.
Shaping up to be a nice, cool evening.
Jane doesn't know what the fuck to say, because Trixie's so loaded she can't follow what she's saying.
Maybe he has a good side to him, too, that I entirely fucking missed. It's always fucking possible, drunk as I am fucking continuously.
Do you ever see two drunks trying to reason with each
it's
other
nice
in a bar?
To see you.
I used to be one of them. I always wanted to write a play about two drunks getting into a fight to the death about what they're going to do with their lottery winnings. Each guy saying, yeah, I'm going to give you 60%, but how much are you going to give me?
Mrs. Ringhausen.
Less,
I'm
you
recurring to the
prick.
Topic, hoping you'll be more expansive. He accepted the timepiece, ma'am, and raised another subject you and I ought pursue at some different moment. Must I credit the right of that aunt, Mrs. Ringhausen, or may I suspect you enjoy setting terms? Terms, ma'am? Playing arbitrary.
Yeah, I wrote this scene because we just heard that Sarah got that part, so I had to...
Pursuing the second subject Mr. Bullock raised,
make a
Mrs.
bit of a left turn here.
Now present, junior to you and
so
me.
So I had Alma get pissed off at her. Alma's on what they call a... dry drunk. She's withdrawing from the dope, and a lot of times you keep acting the way you did, except you're just dry now.
I've no further need.
So she's very short tempered.
I'll say goodnight then to you and Sophia.
My preference is your saying goodbye.
I wonder, ma'am, if having made so many decisions so quickly, your patience may be short just now. And I'd appeal to you to reconsider your preferences in the morning.
In any case, you'll want to retire to your room.
I hope you'll recall that I've traveled from Chicago to enter your employ and have no emergent prospects.
We'll come to some arrangement.
All right. I'll say goodnight then.
As is your custom, without having spared one affectionate look for my child.
My training, ma'am, is that being engaged to see to the child's education, my soliciting her affections would intrude on the mother's province.
That's a pretty good speech.
And I would call that a logical distinction, Miss Isringhausen, having nothing to do with the way people live.
What did I just do?
People downstairs are scared.
Are they?
Off your talk. They think you believe the camp's in jeopardy.
I ain't answerable for misinterpretations. The truth is, Lila, the weather's getting better. And it looks to stay mild a spell. Oh, sighs outlasted the cocksuckers one more time. If it's in me to kid myself, I'd take this for proving God loves me.
I believe he loves us.
Do you, sweetheart? Did his hand lead me by in turning you out? It's a lovely thought. Next year in touch, would you put the good word in?
I do. I pray for you every night.
All right, stupid. Time to shut your fucking mouth.
That's a tough one for a guy like Tolliver to feel somebody's praying for him.
Close your eyes.
Light in August, it's a great novel by Faulkner. And the fundamental turn in it is when this woman starts praying over this guy. He kills her.
Lift your leg. Languid.
That's Brad Dourif's daughter.
Your case, Atlantis.
Fiona. She just got a big part in a movie.
Can you hold that for half an hour?
I've been holding this my whole fucking life.
Mr. W.
Hello.
You jumped the gun on our opening by half an hour, but I believe we can make an exception. My partner, Joni. How do you do?
How do you do?
I'll call her a fancy.
Now, here's an interesting thing, you know.
Which is hid beneath the floorboard at the bar.
People who've been scarred psychologically in the sexual department.
Where is she?
When they're pre-adolescent.
Detained.
You don't
they have radar for each other. They don't understand it, but they respond to each other immediately. And this is Joni. You know, Joni's old man turned her out and had her sleeping with her sisters and everything. And she has no idea why she's doing what she's doing now. She's trying to provoke this guy.
Is her arrival imminent?
A matter of days.
How many days are in a matter?
Would fucking something else fill the time?
Yeah, how much you cost?
I ain't for sale, sir. But I would fuck you for free.
Well, I have to say, you ain't my type.
Do you stand there, Mr. W., saying...
See, now they're both acting out. He isn't talking the way he usually talks. She is so much more forward than you'll ever see her. Sir?
And ain't our quoted fee to surprise you fair and just?
I always pay for pussy.
Well, I may let you then. If you go ahead and twist my arm.
She's volunteering to be abused.
Do unhand me.
Thinking under the guise of flirting.
Mr. W., who I just unhanded.
And there's a homicidal undertone to it. See her show the gun? When that radar kicks in, both parties just go nuts and they have no idea what they're doing.
Cocksucker, I'm going to be working for the rest of my life.
Richardson, Richardson, Richardson. When will come the quiet hours of our declining years?
Now, Farnham, working for Wolcott, is trying to spread the disinformation about the claims being invalidated, so he figures he can get Richardson. He can bullshit Richardson.
Won't you sit yourself? Allow me to take up your labors. I am confiding that turbulence, upheaval of the most violent sort, churning seas, waves of a scale and force to make the most seasoned seafarer vomit, are in prospect for this camp. And we, Richardson, you, I,
With the dead face. Others.
So very many others who journeyed to the hills to stake their claims. And with those claims, their hopes for the future are but pawns of the savage sea and playthings of the fucking deep. Not for us, apparently, the placid harbor on which voyages near complete to bob and rot, be calmed. For us, to the very end, the dizzying surges of the storm and its crashing descents. Do you understand me, you repulsive lout?
No.
The claims, Richardson,
the
are being overturned. Save those few who dispose of their holdings before word circulates.
See, their whole scam is to get people to sell cheap so Wolcott can buy up the claims for her.
Yes. Even you now recognize the situation. Oh, well. Take the rest of the night off, Richardson.
Thank you, sir.
But confide in no one about the claims.
Would we have even more fun naked? Or I could, and you could stay dressed. Or the opposite.
Who am I?
You're Mr. W. Your boss struck bigger than anyone in the Comstock in Mexico. So you being here puts a shine to this camp's prospects.
Unbutton my shirt.
Yes, sir.
Do not look at my face.
No, sirree.
Shall I tell you who I work for?
As you wish. If you do, how shall I occupy myself while you're doing it?
The same as if I don't.
For me to judge.
As you wish.
Your shirt buttons are your big interest. Or shall we advance to these buttons here?
So this is kind of the scene, in my imagination, that always sealed Wolcott's doom. Because beneath all of the sort of rigid kind of role-playing,
shall I hazard an approach on myself I never remember of?
He senses a fellow sufferer.
Will you supervise closely?
And he says something about, you know, what a confined space for an original mind. Or he starts to, you know, the thing is that with an obsessive like that, the idea is once you start the ritual, it has its own logic, and that's the relief for the obsessive, which is I don't have to that unrelieved sense of sinfulness or being dirty. It just turns into a routine, so you sort of check your brains in the coat room. Now, if he begins to attach feelings to it, things get a little weird for him.
I'll just be here in my girl's world diddling myself.
I admire you coming armed.
Hey. I'm gonna pass this through your penis up into your bladder, Alan. I'm gonna say this to you once. I'm sorry for how it hurts.
God damn it, hold him still.
Mother of God.
See, all over the camp. The disruption.
Fuck you, Johnny. Get in there and fucking help him.
What am I supposed to do?
Put your hand in his mouth. Let him bite your fucking hand.
All right, Al.
I'm in your bladder. I can hear the fucking stone. I'm gonna try now to move the stone to release your water, so you push now if you can, son.
God, mother, take
push now if you can't get your water flowing.
I always believed that our fundamental identity isn't individual, it's collective. And the sense of ourselves as separate is the real illusion.
I'll fucking kill you, Doc.
And we find our best nature when we experience ourselves as part of some larger single organism. That's what I was trying to.
All right. I can see some.
See, they're all one creature.
The blood, good for you.
Is he all right now? Is he cured now?
It's fucking something anyway.
Is that something anyway, Doc?
All right. Al, I'm going to take it out of you. You hold on and it won't hurt so bad.
He put something out of himself, Trixie.
He doesn't understand what he's saying.
Anyway.
Is it out of him?
That instrument's out of him.
And what of the fucking stone?
I didn't see no fucking stone come out.
Well, I enjoyed watching this with you. I hope you have a good year. I hope we're all around and we'll talk about some other show next year.
The man I love is nothing but skin and bones. The man I love is nothing but skin and bones. Next big money I make, to Hot Springs he's gone. He used to tramp on my feelings, make my poor heart moan. Used to tramp on my feelings, make my skin and bone.